Okay, we're getting to that part of the semester here. I can tell by the numbers of people here. So, I'm going ahead and getting started rather than waiting. People are going to be trickling in. That's fine. I have to head off for a meeting downtown, and so I'm going to try to end here around 2:15. So, if I start forgetting things, if you could remind me, I'd appreciate it. I got to go ahead for the bus. So needless to say, I won't have office hours after class today. But I will be around during the day and like the afternoon tomorrow and stuff and things. If you need to talk to me or something, let me know. So I made a little plan for the rest of the semester. So we'll see how this works, subject to change. But today I wanted to, on Tuesday we talked about design strategies. Today I'm going to talk about regular expressions and related topics. Then SQL and NoSQL. I'll actually try to go through some of SQL and then talk about NoSQL and try to give you some ideas about how to choose them. Talk about other web frameworks. Try to give you some overview of like the various strengths and weaknesses, the basic differing strategies compared to Node. Then I'll spend a week on security, and then talk about the future of the web. And in the middle of this, I will be giving you. Next week, so by Monday I have to have your final exam finished. I was really supposed to have it done yesterday, but the admin folks are being nice to me, so I'll have your final exam put together by Monday, and I will be setting up questions for you all based on that, so I'll be extracting parts of that that are new, that you don't know, and that's what will be your questions for the rest of the semester. So, yes?
And the exam's going to be the entire course, not from the midterm on?
Entire course.
Nautilus stuff, too?
Huh?
Nautilus stuff, too?
A
little bit. It's stuff that I'll reinforce in class.
Okay.
Yeah. So, there'll be a little bit of networking on there, just in terms of seeing what things are.
Networking, like LAN networking, rather than networking internet. Networking.
Well, the internet is just a collection of LANs. And there's a whole routing table thing. So did he talk about routing tables and routing protocols?
No, didn't get there.
Okay.
We got to like Ethernet.
Okay.
No, he did the ARP calls on
ARP is local. That's not routing.
Yeah.
Okay. I might talk a little bit about there if we have some extra time in there, but probably will come up in the context of security. And I'm going to put his slides up on there. I haven't done that yet. Anyway, so before I start babbling on about regular expressions, any quick questions, other things that are bugging you? So I went through the list of questions. They're now here on, I've now actually added them to this one, the ones that we had here in class earlier. And most of these seem like they're things that will come up in the other stuff, and otherwise they're very specific things I think are good for... there's specific technology questions that I can talk about if people really want to, but it's like LDAP and Node.js. That's basically look up the LDAP stuff. I have to explain LDAP databases and things, and it's not that interesting. It's a lot of details, no conceptual issues. I tried to focus on the things that are some big conceptual things that you need to know so you can understand the details when you go out and learn it on your own. Yes. It is being recorded, and actually, if you look at it's the wiki pages have been updated. But if you go to so if you look here. Here are all the files, and you'll see I basically have everything up to March 7th, and then I'm going to upload tonight the ones from this week. I just haven't added the links there, but all the lectures are always here. So, yeah, they're on the website. So I will add those. But also, I hadn't done any quizzes, so I wasn't as motivated to do it. So, mm-hmm.
Out of the questions, session management, it may be alluding to cookies.
So cookies, session management will, I've talked some about session management. I'll try. Session management also comes up in the context of SQL and web frameworks, so I'll be talking about it there. What, how do they approach session management?
Tutorial as well,
exactly.
Okay.
So if you have specific questions, like I don't want to cut like on these other little topic stuff. I'm happy to answer specific things and like how to get started or details, but I don't want to just spend lots of time in class just sort of talking in general. The things I want to focus on are these things. And of course, the last one is kind of. I do think these last two lectures are actually pretty important. Before that, with web server and client security, because frankly, web security is so bad. So, try to explain to you what the issues are there. So, yeah.
So we're gonna get duck marks in our projects if we are not secure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, doing a full security analysis of each of your projects is way beyond the scope of what I can do during grading.
But there's some simple stuff that, like, if
Bobby tables.
Well, yeah, basically. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, are we expected to at least take care of the sanitizing input? Or
well, that's actually what I'm talking about.
Okay.
No. So, okay, I'm going to go ahead and get started on regular expressions. So, if you've seen regular expressions, you may have seen them come up in the course of various things. They tend to be these things demarcated by slashes, and they have parentheses, and they have W's, and they have, you know, dot and backslashes, and all kinds of, it looks like a mess.
Well, they're different than the regular expressions taught in 3803 and 2805. Same name, same concept, but different notation.
Yes.
Right, because one back there. Yes,
right.
Sure. But no, we have to create that distinction.
Right. No, but the thing is, it's so what I'm going to try explaining is like what's the connection between this and that.
Sure.
That's right. So there are a number of notations for what's known as regular expressions, and regular expressions, as a concept, before you can understand regular expressions, you have to understand the concept of languages and parsing. So computer science, like every discipline, is formed by, you know, what were the initial problems that it was set up to deal with. And computer science had to deal with a lot of data processing, a lot of text manipulation. So a lot of the theory in computer science is around that. Like, for example, sorting. There is an insane amount of work on sorting. And in a lot of contexts, sorting is useless. But in certain domains, sorting is very important. And so there is elaborate theories about how to do sorting well, and how to do sorting badly, and what the performance of. So, regular expressions is part of another tradition of this. And the tradition this comes down to is parsing, in particular, the Chomsky hierarchy. So, have you all heard of Chomsky before?
Yes.
You might have heard about him in politics.
Yes.
So he did his, so the hierarchy of grammar was described by Noam Chomsky in 1956. And I think, you know, really, you know, the late 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, people were taking his insights in languages and stuff and running with it. And still it's, you know, seminal work, very influential, kind of defines entire areas of linguistics, how, you know, how they, people think about it, either agreeing or disagreeing with what he did. Now he spends his time writing books about, you know, the oppression of, you know, various peoples and the problems of empires and the United States and stuff. And honestly, his stuff, he isn't, I'll just say as a personal, it's not that he's wrong, but he pushes his agenda very hard and sometimes skews things. It's good to read Chomsky, but don't only read Chomsky, please, if you're doing politics. And the same thing goes for reading about the Chomsky hierarchy and things. Really, any field you should know about more than just what one person says about something. But why Chomsky is famous as an intellectual other than the politics is he was interested in how languages, as in human languages, are represented in the brain. He's a pioneer in the field of linguistics. You know, we're saying computer science. Why do I care about linguistics? Well, computer scientists looked at the way Chomsky formalized languages and thought, hey, you've got a model. It's a formal model. If I put that in a program, maybe I can use that to have a computer understand languages. So as part of his formalization of the structure of the grammar of languages, he came up with this notion. Well, first off, there's this notion of productions. So this looks very abstract. I'm going to try to explain it, but I actually find it easier to explain in terms of something that you know. So this is a grammar for describing JavaScript. And it's set up as a set of production rules. And it's so in order to parse a JavaScript program, just like parsing any computer language, you find its you take its grammar and you use its production rules to figure out what each part of it means. So first off, you've got a program. What can a program be? A program is either empty, there's nothing there, or there's an element of a program. So an element can consist of a function identifier, followed by a parentheses, followed by some parameter list options, the parentheses, and a compound statement. So what's a compound statement? You go on down and see this, you see what's a parameter list operation is either empty, or it's a parameter list. A parameter list consists of identifier, or an identifier comma parameter list. You notice that recursive definition is in terms of itself. So this is the classic computer science way of parsing a language, is you have these production rules. And you just do a recursive descent through it some way and say, okay, what does this mean? Okay, do I have this? Okay, this is one of these. Eventually it terminates with certain things like, say, with symbols, or okay, it's identifier, and you look down here. What's an identifier look like in JavaScript? It looks, where is identifier? Did I pass it? Sorry, okay. Okay, yeah.
Can you just search for it?
Yeah, I can. But I'm just kind of curious to see how it's laid out. So condition, for paren, yeah, that's a statement, compound statement, parameter list.
Might
not have it.
It might be an atomic.
No, you gotta have an. I guess maybe. Yeah, you gotta. This grammar isn't complete.
was there
a more thing?
Yeah, I thought so. Oh, previous first.
Yep.
It's definitely complete. Because it seems to imply you require a function in a JavaScript program.
So, the reason why I picked this particular grammar was because it was nice and simple and I could show it. If you go to the JavaScript, the ECMA specification for ECMAScript, which is the formalization of JavaScript, they have lots of things like this, and it's much bigger and much more detailed. It's a 100-something page PDF, and I didn't want to go through that here. So, but this is just to show you what this... When we talk about parsing in computer science terms, we're normally talking about production rules. When we talk about production rules, we're saying we have things on the left and things on the right. Things on the left says, what is this category? And this category breaks down into these subthings. And you have to, how do you parse? You kind of keep winding your way through these production rules, going right here, 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 and then you hopefully get to a termination thing, saying okay, there's nothing more, you don't want loops in this, otherwise that's rather bad for parsing.
The good parts has really good...
Yes, that's true. Yeah. So you'll see these kind of diagrams anytime a computer language is described formally. JavaScript, the good parts, has a whole chapter where they show you lots of these kinds of diagrams. What I want to talk a little bit about, though, is what kinds of things can you do with these diagrams? And that's really what the Chomsky hierarchy is about, is what kind of languages can be captured using these kinds of rules? And what sort of representations, what sort of representation do you need for different kinds of languages? So the basic elements of it is this. I mean, now there's you talk to theoreticians, this hierarchy is much more complicated than this. But the basic categories that Chomsky set up
were regular languages, context-free languages, context-sensitive languages, and recursively enumerable languages. So now when you get here, now you start talking about when you start talking about Turing machines and stuff. So, type zero grammars include all formal grammars. They don't exist. Exactly, all languages have to be recognized by a Turing machine. The RE language. So,
you get into the top. It's what a computer can formally represent. That's what a Turing machine can do. And that's what a computer can do. Principle. That's recursively enumerable languages. So if you can in principle write a program to do it, there, no. Is English recursively enumerable?
No.
Unknown. That's AI complete. If you can write a program that can fully understand English, it would fit into RE. Has anyone made a program that fully understands English? No. But a lot of people think that English is in recursively enumerable languages. That's the basis of, you know, of believing that computers can, you know, mimic human intelligence. But strictly speaking, that has not been demonstrated either way. So in order to demonstrate membership in a class, you have to have some sort of example or some sort of proof that it doesn't fit in there. So RE, that's what computers can do. Do human language fit in there? Not strictly determined. But then we get these other ones. Context sensitive. What I really want to start with is the regular languages here. So we'll go here. So the bottom of the hierarchy, you notice this thing called regular languages. When we talk about regular expressions, we're talking about regular languages. That's what's this. So this is the bottom of the Chomsky hierarchy. So you say it's the bottom, that means it's in a sense the easiest thing to parse. Now the thing to understand about, when you do regular expressions, you're doing regular languages. When you're doing most computer languages, like JavaScript or Perl or anything else, they normally are context-free languages, at least mostly. Sometimes they're context-free plus a few little annoying bits. But then otherwise, you get into context-sensitive. So is English context-sensitive? Yeah, right? The context of what one word means depends on what other words are around it. But you see that for computer languages, they are typically context-free. That means you have the program fragment by itself. It should mean what it means always. Now, again, we're talking about parsing the language, not understanding it fully. This is the grammar of it. How does it fit together? So this is where really this came into play was when compilers were being developed. People said, I want to be able to create a language that the computer can understand, but that also kind of looks like English. How do you make a program do that? You know, when they first were trying to create languages like Fortran and COBOL, they were just coding it by hand. And it was difficult. Formalizing it gave us better tools. Like nowadays, if you have a grammar description like this for JavaScript, you can create a program automatically that parses it. Anyone know of like a free program that does this? Or a common program?
Bison.
Bison, which is a GNU version of Lex. Is that right? There's Yak and Bison, which is Lex and... God, so funny. So these are programs, they will generate for you a C program. You give it the grammar, it gives you a C program. And then you just have to decide what code you want to associate with each production rule. And it will automatically figure out how to do this. So it makes life a lot easier. You don't have to write this really complicated set of parsing. Now, as I'll talk about when we go to security, parsing you'd think is like the solved problem. It actually isn't. Parsing is with us all the time, and a lot of security problems boil down to bad parsing. Now, where this comes into play here now is we're talking about finite state automata, which is the mechanistic representation of regular expressions. Anything that I can represent as a finite state automata can be represented through a regular expression. They're isomorphic. Same thing. So what does a finite state automata look like? That. You've all seen these kind of pictures before, right? Now, the key thing to remember for interpreting these pictures is to think that you're an entity going between these states, and you have no memory. The only thing you can remember, well, the only thing you know, is what state you're in. That is your entire knowledge. You can't say, oh, I came from, you know, I was just in the unlocked state, and now I'm in the locked state. You can't remember where you were in the past. All you know is you're in the locked state right now. And so anything that you can parse by making this sort of diagram, you'd represent as a regular expression. So where does this come in handy? What sort of things would you want to do, make this sort of diagram for in the web space? URLs? No.
Server.
You did it. It's
the server. We want to have the server have at the least state possible.
No, it has nothing to do with that. It's not about conserving memory. And in fact, when you actually do actual regular expression parsing, you do have to use memory.
Data validation.
It's about data validation. It's about figuring out, it's about parsing. I mean, where do you have to parse things? You get input from the user. You have to interpret it in some way. Like, for example, a user inputs a date. The date is encoded in a string. How do you figure out where the year is, where the month is, and where the day is? You could write a little program to extract that, doing manual string manipulation. But you can also write a regular expression to match the pattern of a date. And it will once you specify the pattern, you'll automatically assign for you, okay, now this, you know, M equals the month, D equals the date, Y equals a year. And it can take, and the regular expression cleverly created will take care of all the details and the differences in formatting. Like, might there be a space before or after the comma? Might there be, you know how are the digits? Is it a two-year, a two-digit year, or is it a four-digit year? You can build regular expressions to account for those differences. So what this should tell you is that regular expressions are restricted little parsing programs, generally very densely represented. That's the great thing about regular expressions, and that's the horrible thing about regular expressions. Honestly, if you have a problem that is well solved by a regular expression, go ahead and use it. But if you can avoid parsing, that's better. But the fact is, you're going to need probably a regular expression, or you're going to use something that uses a regular expression at some point in it, because parsing is everywhere. Now, let's say, though, you need to parse HTML. Let's say you write a parse for HTML. Do you want to do it using a finite automata?
No.
God, no. You might want to do the parsing of the individual tags as regular expressions. But the overall structure of an HTML document, you do not want to do with regular expressions. Can't. But why can't you? Because it's a finite state automata. How do you capture arbitrary amounts of nesting? Because remember, you have to remember end tags corresponding to start tags. You can't remember that, the distance. But finite state automata have no memory except what state you're in. So you'd have to build a finite automata to represent every possible level of depth. You can kind of, you could make a partial HTML parser using regular expressions, but
like 256.
But it'd be limited to like, okay, your page cannot nest more than, you know, three levels deep. It just gets ugly really fast. And this is actually the biggest thing to understand about things like regular expressions, is you have to know when they make sense and when they don't. And when they make sense is when you want to understand a bit of data that is completely self-contained, that all the data is right there, and you don't care, and any sort of repeats or patterns in it, you don't care about how many of them except for in a very restricted fashion. Like, can you do counting in a regular expression? No. But we can do you counting up to a finite length because it used to go from state to state to state. Now when I count to five, what do I do? I want to count, see, do I have five letters? So here I go A, 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 A. So this is the starts. So if I start here at the S, and I want to parse a string and see, does it match this or not? So, and this is the end state. So all this will match is if you start here and you get one A, another A, another A, another A, another A, and then you get to the end, then it's a match. So that means A, 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 A. What happens if I have four A's?
No, just
get all the way.
I'll get here, I won't get to the end state. What if I have six ones? No, no, I can't. I don't have anything transition going off here. So I'll go like, wait, I don't know what to do. I'm in a state where I have no exit. So it'll say, uh-uh. Now, what I could do is I could then have a state here that points back to itself. And I could have this be, you know, dot, that could be anything. So if I have this here, then it'll match anything A, followed by garbage. These are the kind of patterns you can represent with regular expressions. But if you want to do something that's more of a looks like more like a program structure, then you're getting into context-free languages. And you hope, and in order to make sure it's context-free, you often have to make certain sacrifices in how your language is expressed. That's one of the, if you could express it as an appropriate grammar, it's fine. Sometimes people actually have arguments in designing computer languages saying, I can't make a parser for that. I can't come up with a grammar that is context-free. You've put in this feature in it. You gotta take that feature out. And I can say, but I could write this long of a program to take care of that a little bit. Well, no. So, what am I? So if we're talking about syntax, so behind the scenes, you should always think there is some diagram like this. If you can't draw a diagram like this to express what you're trying to do, you probably should be using a regular expression. But in terms of the patterns, at a practical level, so now we're talking, the other thing to notice about JavaScript, about regular expressions, is the basic syntax that is used in programming language for regular expressions is mostly the same between languages. It was originally defined for Unix command line programs, grep, sed, those programs used regular expressions. Then Perl expanded it a bit. That has regular expressions, but it's basically the same power. And then now most other languages support some minor variant of that. But the details are always slightly different, which makes it a real pain for trying to understand these things. So you really, when I see a regular expression, in any language, I generally have to, unless I've been programming for a while in that language, I have to go back and look at the reference. What do those things mean? And it's really the ultimate write once, never, you know, read never. Use comments whenever you use a regular expression. Please.
A full paragraph.
Yeah, yeah. And also, if you, it might be okay to maybe do something with multiple regular expressions rather than just one. That's okay. But again, you have to make sure of the semantics. So what do you do to use regular expressions? You make a regular expression object.
That's interesting.
And then you can, and there's two ways of doing it here. Either you can use the slash pattern. This is the classic Unix way of specifying regular expressions. Or you just give the content and say new regular expression and then give the contents of what's between the slashes.
Mm-hmm.
What?
What?
Oh. You have to use new when the API calls for it. Right? That's, you will use that in JavaScript. But so then you're wondering, what do these things mean? So like A, B plus C. So let's look at these special characters. So this is, you have a backslash, that's an escape. So how do you match a slash inside of a regular expression?
Yeah.
You have to escape it. So you get these nice pattern of like when you want a matching forward slashes, you get these backslash forwards, you know, things, and it just looks like little hats. It's rather annoying. So what's this? The caret symbol matches the beginning of the input. Now, this is one of the so and then dollar matches the end of the input. Now, this is one of the annoying things about regular expressions. Some regular expressions default to being single line. So you give it a string, and it parses it line by line, assuming a line feed or a carriage return or something terminates each line in the string. Other ones assume multi-line input. So beginning and end match the beginning of the string and the end of the string. Normal Unix command line stuff is each line is demarcated by a line feed or it's based by a line feed character. So that's what Unix text files, lines are separated by a line feed character. And so you deal with that one, then you do the next one, the next one. In JavaScript, that's not the default. The default seems to be, correct me if this is wrong, but the default seems to be match the whole string. And that dollar, that caret indicates the beginning of the string, dollar indicates the end of the string.
I know, I've come into the issue and it's one or the other.
It's one or the other, right, exactly. I was looking this up and I was like, I think it's that way. I was going like, oh. Well, in some sense, in processing HTML, it kind of makes sense that it's multi-line by default, because you don't normally care about line feeds.
Normally, I just take out all the white space. It's easier for me to parse most of the time.
Most of the time, yeah. Multi-stage processing. So the star. So then there's the star and there's the plus. These are the two workhorses of regular expressions. Whatever precedes them, you repeat this number of times. Either if it's a star, let's say you have a star. That means that's a sequence of A's zero or more times. So there could be no A, and that would match. Plus matches the preceding character one or more times. So the empty string matches this. Only A plus only will has to match at least a string with A, or AA, or AAA, or AAA, as many A's as you want. Yes? Sorry, repeat that, sorry.
So we have a hat,
would be the car, you said?
Yeah, he's talking about scheme.
Yeah, okay, well, those are separate things. This is referring to in the string, when you have a caret, you're saying that if I have caret A, that means I want to match at, the string has to start with zero or more A's. This one says the string has to start with one or more A's. If I have a dollar sign, if I put a dollar at the end, that means I'll be having, you know, some arrays, and then I end the string. Or they end the line.
But it can also be not.
Caret? Not.
Not in
here. Not
in
here. That's in a class, right, yes. Yes, right. So then the other thing is character class. So plus, so and then question mark is 0, 1. Either it happens or not. So a question mark will be no A's or one A, but not two A's. The dot matches any single character except the new line character. So that's your wild card. So this is the one thing, if you're used to glob notation, like for matching files at the command line in the shell, the anything goes is the star character there. In regular expression, the anything goes is the dot. So if you want anything goes, you say dot star instead of just star. So it's important to know whether you're doing file globbing or regular expressions. Regular expressions are more powerful, but are more complicated. So the other key thing to know with regular expressions is things in parentheses. So whenever you specify something, when you put parentheses inside a regular expression, it's just marking an area. It's saying, whatever matches this portion of the regular expression, remember that. And normally number them off. The first set of parentheses is the first one, then the next set of parentheses is number 2, next one is number 3. And then you can refer to it after the regular expression is in parse by those numbers. Say, this is the first match, this is the second match, this is the third match. So for example, if you wanted to get the dates out of a thing, you would specify the first pattern for the month inside parentheses, then you specify, you know, the day and then the month and the year. You specify all those in three separate parentheses, and then you could assign those to numbers later.
So if you wanted to, say, capture the first word out of query, you would do at, in brackets,
yeah,
whatever,
yeah,
matching parameters,
yeah,
are.
Backslash
and
W's.
Then, like, escape into the commas
plus.
And connect it, and then,
yeah. So the other thing to note is, so there's an OR symbol. What I want to do is character classes. This is the big one. It's a character set. So let's say I want to match A, B. I want to have a string consisting of just A's, B's, or C's in any order such that it has at least one letter. That would be A, B, C, followed by plus. So I want at least one letter. So this, when you use square bracket, it's like it's just one letter. Wherever you'd want just one letter, you can instead have this. So just like we had A star, we have A, B, C star. So now this can be, this will match A, B, C, A, B, B, C, C, C. These will all match. Or BC, yeah, it doesn't have to start with an A. It's just, this is just a set, and any element of that set. So, of course, regular expressions are very oriented around text processing. So, you couldn't, if you want to do a finite state automata with something else, regular expressions isn't normally a notation to use it, but you could, in principle, map it to one. But behind the scenes, realize when you define a regular expression, it's actually generating code in order to parse this. And there's some very sophisticated code, you know, code generation for doing regular expression matching very fast. Don't try to code this on your own and do it well. Other people have spent a lot of time optimizing this stuff. If you can use the built-in regular expression parser to do your work, it's going to be faster than anything you write. Almost always. I mean, unless you're doing something really bog simple. So, you know, that's a character class, and then the negated complement, that's where it's in the character, the caret comes in again. If you want anything but A, B, or C, put the caret there. And then you can also specify ranges of characters. You know, instead of just listing them, you can say A through D. So if I want to say anything, you know, upper and lowercase characters, I can just do A through Z, A through Z. context. Now, one thing, if you're looking at this parsing and you think about it for a second, you should notice something. Well, one thing in particular should pop out if you know about how text is represented in modern computer programs, which is Unicode. Regular expressions can be used to do arbitrary Unicode things, but Unicode is weird. It's, yeah, when you start taking things like Unicode strings and what they exactly mean and what symbols are, I mean, it's just, it's a mess. So that's one reason why, like, for example, you're trying to parse a date, don't code it yourself. You're trying to parse it, you know, if you want to accept full Unicode strings with it, use a library. There are people who have solved this for you. Let them do the work. Let them mess with the regular expressions. Actually, that's why I'd say, generally, in your code, if you put a regular expression in there, you're probably not using the right library. Probably. So, then there's, you know, word boundaries and other things. I mean, if you go through this, you can see all the possibilities for cool things you can do with regular expressions. Things for, you know, things in a word, you know, nice white space, matching number, you know, character classes that are predefined for matching numbers. For matching a specific, you want to have a specific character that you can't type out, and you give a numeric value of it in octal, normally. And a non-digit character matches, you know, a new line, line fee, carriage return, R, and S. So, anyway, you can go through it for all the details, but basically, you have some notion of text, you want to process it in this sort of way, regular expression is going to support it. But, try not to do it if you don't need to. Yes?
Can you write down a mock example of how one would use that? In the sense of, like, I understand how it creates pattern representation.
Oh, yeah, how's the code work?
So you have a query, and you want to extract something from it.
So, I just want to see if I can show you. You had some examples here. So like this is a simple example. So you just take you get the regular expression, you store it. So what does this one do right here? Oh, I didn't talk about modifiers. I'll talk about modifiers in a second. But you see, so backslash W means a word character. So you got some number of letters followed by a space, a white space character, and then some number of letters. And those are two groups. And here's a string, John Smith. And so the new string is string. So now there's all these operations that take regular expressions. It's like a string, take it as a replace method. And so you give it the regular expression, and now you say $2, $1. It means this is 1, this is 2. Now you're reversing the order of the names. Exactly. Yes?
So what happens if the second one doesn't catch anything that you come up as undefined or null display anything properly?
I think no match makes it an empty string. I'm not sure. Actually, that's a good question, but the no match.
Try it before.
Hmm?
It just wouldn't match. Just try it.
No, but what's the value of, like, 2?
Just try it.
Try it.
What about blank?
Okay, fine.
Hmm?
Okay. Can I do it right there?
Do it on any page.
Oh, wait, yeah, never mind. This isn't
Chrome. Yeah, this isn't. Yeah.
Control-Shift-K, then.
Control-Shift-K for this code? Okay.
Yeah, I love
it.
So just copy and paste that.
Yeah.
Copy.
Well, let's first make sure this works. Smith Johns, that worked. Okay, that worked. Now we'll just make this John. Okay.
No, skip the comma.
Skip the comma. How did it skip the comma?
Because there's no 2.
No, it should print comma space.
Yeah.
They're magic. It doesn't match, therefore it doesn't do any replacements, therefore it's the original string.
Oh.
Watch out.
Thank you.
Over here.
Yes. Exactly. So.
Because
the whole point, replacement is specifying mutation operations on the string. If the mutation doesn't match, then you get nothing back. And actually, that's typically what happens with regular expressions. You tell it to replace things, and it doesn't match, and then the string comes out the same, and you thought it was transformed, and like you thought you got rid of something bad, and it was there, but didn't quite match your regular expression, and so you're,
you get these there. Regular expressions for security?
Yes. So in the security context, regular expressions are horrific, because people try to get rid of bad patterns in HTML by using regular expressions, and they always mess it up. Because let someone else have spent the hard work of developing lots of elaborate regular expressions to sanitize your input, to find all the bad things, because you're going to miss some. And they probably miss some, but they'll miss fewer things than you did.
They've got a bunch of smart people working on that thing, and they'll update it too.
That's where code reuse comes in. So I can talk more about detail, but really regular expressions are the kind of things you just sort of start making regular expressions for. And again, I don't really expect you mostly to use this. I more think you should be able to recognize what this is, realize, oh, that's nasty. Do I have to parse that? Do I have to figure out what that works or something? And you basically plan on spending some time of like going through and saying, okay, what does that letter mean? What is that thing there? And you think you understand the regular expression, then you go like, oh. I mean, you literally have to pay attention to every character. Like, for example, what is a letter at the end of this? Anyone know what that is? If I put a letter after the slash?
You have different flags. So you get global.
Yes. So there are flags. So let's see the flags part here. So by default, regular expression matching stops at the first match. If you do global, then it tries doing the regular expression on the whole string. It keeps doing it. So this is important. Depending on what kind of parsing you want, you often will want to specify G.
Something simple like tokenizing would probably be done well by regular expressions. Just do a global with.
So the classic use of regular expressions is to extract identifiers and other small bits of a program, and then the context-free grammar. So the grammar here. The grammar here. Each of these things at the bottom end would probably be understood by a regular expression. And then those regular expressions are assembled together by this context-free grammar. So this is what if you take a compiler course, they typically spend like a third of the course on this sort of stuff. On the different ways of doing the grammars, the different efficiencies of doing this, LL versus LR versus LALR, and those have to do with the way these production rules are interpreted and stuff, and now they're simplified. I mean, again, this is a whole area of computer science. I can't possibly do it justice in one lecture. All I can do is just so you know what is there and what you should learn if you're doing that. So you see a regular expression. If it's a simple one, you can probably figure it out. If it's a complicated one, you should go, why am I using this code? Do I trust it? Because if it's a complicated regular expression, it's probably got a bug.
It's
yes?
No.
Except, well, you don't have to know the details of regular expressions. I might ask you, you'll see, I'll give you preparation. You're not going to be, but knowing about regular expressions and finite state automata being the same thing, that's something you should know. That's kind of a nice high-level concept you should have in your mind, that when you see these weird strings, they're just giving a compact representation of these state diagrams.
So how does this relate to web programming?
Parsing. So you do an HTML4. You want to make sure that users input the right kind of information on the on the client, like they format their name properly. Let's say you want to enter an email address. And you want the email address to look like an email address. You want it to have an @. The classic way of doing this is to specify a regular expression. And you can do the regular expression validation in JavaScript in your client-side page. and then give a little error when it's not correct. Now, first off, do you assume on the server side that the client-side code did its job?
Totally.
Yeah, not at all. It is purely a user interface thing. The server has to revalidate everything. If you run the basic rule is if you do a regular expression on the client, you have to do that and probably more on the server. You have to check it on both ends. Because who knows what you got? Just an HTTP GET and POST, and those can be made up. The other thing is use a library. Like, remember we talked about jQuery UI and had all those nice things for, you know, the date picker thing and the, you know, giving a list of stuff and things. Underneath the hood, there's regular expressions and stuff going on there. Use the higher level thing. It will make things a lot less messy. It will do a lot better input validation than whatever code you cook up. We can do these sort of things. Use it. You don't have to worry. I mean, clients can take a lot of code. Use the libraries liberally. I mean, only optimize if you absolutely have to. That's where jQuery and jQuery UI is really nice, because they have all these things to help you with it. So, again, if you're writing your own regular expressions, it should only be for very custom input, for things that are fitting a very domain-specific kind of thing. If you're trying to do something that's like a standard input type, like a date or a name or email address or something like that, you're doing it wrong. Don't use a regular expression. Use a standard way of getting that input. I know it's kind of weird to say, here's this technology, don't use it. But part, I feel like, of learning computer science is not just learning all the pieces, parts, but learning taste. And it's very tempting when you make code to want to make everything work exactly the way you think it should. Specify every little detail and don't do it. Take the time, learn the library, learn the API, and use it. Because they spent more time thinking about the problem than you did. If the API can solve your problem, use it. Code reuse. So, Chomsky hierarchy. So that's all for regular expressions. Then, what was one of the pieces? Now I've got room for one of the pieces that we hadn't talked about. Sessions, I think, was one of them. I don't want to start that right now. Let's go back to the questions. Which ones? Let me start with. Okay. Tier client side data, cookies. Okay, I'll start talking about NoSQL. Fine. It's a lot of the stuff. Do you start up MongoDB at the start? When do you start up MongoDB? Your system should start it up, yes.
Yeah, the daemon should be running.
It should just be running. Yeah.
Except that I don't want it always running on my computer whenever I turn my computer on.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm saying is, on a web server, it should be running as a background service. So, in production, I mean, in development, hey, you can fire it up when you need to, but you know enough. When your application errors out and says, I can't connect to the database, you get to figure it out. One reason to put code in there to check for these things. So,
actually,
yes?
If you have some time, maybe if you could talk about the pluses and minuses of using mongoose versus just doing things in a straight.
Mongoose is way better.
I'm not using it right now, but I'm
interested. So this gets down to database choice. So, in particular, this NoSQL versus SQL debate. When you say NoSQL, you're not talking about one way of designing a data store. It's just saying not SQL. It's some other way of organizing it, which just means that the semantics of the underlying data store does not follow SQL semantics. which really means it's talking about concurrency. And the question you should ask always about your app is how much shared interaction is there of data? How much concurrency is there in the data? Like, for example, if you are talking about let's say it's an email store. You're storing individuals' emails. Are you going to have much occasion for different users accessing each other's email?
No.
No. It's a relatively low concurrency thing. Most users will only be accessing their email one at a time. You won't have 10 people accessing their inbox at the same time.
Unless they had.
What that means is you don't have to have a consistent view of the data from everywhere. When one person logs in and they're accessing their data, their email's there, and then maybe if a couple minutes later, when you access another machine, you get the same state, that's fine. SQL is all about saying the same view everywhere. You want things to be completely consistent. But then there is concurrency with email access. What's a concurrency? What's happening in the background while you're reading your email?
Downloading.
New email could show up. When new email shows up in your inbox, do you want it to erase all the changes you've made?
Yes.
Do you want it to corrupt your inbox? It's like, oh, I just tried, deleting a message. And a new email message came in exact same time. Oh, they're both accessing the same data structure at the same time. They overwrote part of it. Uh-oh. You don't want that to happen. So there is some amount of concurrency, and in general, with no SQL databases, their support for concurrency is manual. You have to pay attention to the concurrency issues. They will have atomic changes that you can use as a bit to build things out of, but you're in charge of making sure the data doesn't go all corrupted. If you use an SQL-based database, you don't have to worry about these things. Either your client modifies the email store, or the incoming email modifies it, but it's the same either one happens in the other, or that one happens in this one. There's no way for the two to intermingle. There's no way for them to corrupt the data if you use SQL properly. That's the whole point of SQL, in my mind.
But Mongo will still do write logs and stuff when you're pulling and...
They have the tools for doing it right. But in an SQL database, it almost takes care of everything for you automatically. It's not that you can't handle concurrency in a no SQL database. It's that you're in charge of handling concurrency. And this is why no SQL databases are favored in web applications, because a lot of times you don't need so much concurrency, and having really tight guarantees limits scalability. So the thing you should ask of the design of your application is how much concurrent access is there going to be to any particular part of your data? It's not like, it's not about, are 100 clients accessing your database? It's that are 100 clients accessing the database and modifying the same part of the database, the same records. If they're all modifying the same records, potentially interacting with them, particularly writing to them, then you potentially have all kinds of bad things that can happen in terms of corrupting your data. Using a no SQL type database like MongoDB is problematic. It's not that you can't do it, but you're probably going to implement things that look like SQL in there in terms of the various guarantees. And I'll talk about what those things look like. Basically, it's this thing called transactions, which I mentioned before, but that's going to be your problem. But otherwise, if you're just, like, for example, you're just storing individual users or just storing their settings, and they're all separate, you don't need an SQL database. All of its elaborate code guarantees, all of its concurrency guarantees aren't needed because everyone's accessing different data. Let them go for it. They can't corrupt each other because they're doing separate things. And all of the databases are good at managing concurrent access to separate bits of information. So the classic example for SQL type things is things like financial systems or like airline reservations. And the reason there is because you have shared data structures that are accessed by lots of entities at the same time. You know, you've got to reserve the seat. You've got to change the bank balance. Who knows how, you know, like let's say it's your credit card. You're going around, make a charge here, make a charge here, make a charge here. Should those corrupt each other? You know, do you want to all of a sudden, well, would the bank like you to all of a sudden say, oh, you have no charges when you just made 20, you know, 20 charges at the same time? That'd be cool for you. Won't be so cool for the bank. So they don't make it so there. So all these, everyone trying to modify your the data structure representing your credit card statement, those are very strictly interleaved and made sure that, you know, one happens and another happens and another happens and another happens. There's no mixing of the two. That's what SQL is for. No SQL saying, well, that sort of situation doesn't happen. So I want to be fast. Does that help? I mean, it's kind of...
It sucks because our Apex is going to have a lot of concurrent write access if it were to be scaled.
To the same things?
Yeah.
Then you should be using an SQL-type database. Or very carefully using MongoDB, its write barriers and other things to implement your own transactions. Basically. Because that's what... I'll start to explain transactions from the beginning in the, you know, on Thursday. Yes? You corrupt with reads? I didn't hear what you're saying.
You corrupt the data.
Okay, can you corrupt the data with reads? In general, no.
But the
reason why I say in general no, but not absolutely no, is because when you say something is a read, it's not always a read. I'll give you an example of this. In classic Unix file systems, they maintain a timestamp on every access. So that means every time you read a file, you're actually writing to disk to update the timestamp to say that you read the file. So there is a write happening. So sometimes reads generate writes, and those in principle could cause problems. I mean, just, you know, a read can generate a log message. So, first approximation, no. But fully, maybe. Unlikely, but maybe. But what you do have to worry about with reads is, do you care if someone else wrote around the time of your read? Are you going to get back partially updated information? That you have to worry about, like just getting inconsistent data. Someone is in the seat and not in the seat. Have you played Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? The text adventure?
No.
I watched you play it in one of your classes.
Yes. So in if you want to find a truly player hostile text adventure, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a great one. And the reason I say this is because you cannot solve the puzzles using your intuition, because they are deliberately crazy. So for example, at one point you have to have Arthur Dent solve a puzzle by, he has to have T and no T at the same time. It's like, how can you have T and no T at the same time? It goes against common sense. So you have to go into Arthur Dent's brain and remove his common sense, and then you can have T and no T at the same time. You remove his reality data validation. So I'm just saying it's possible to make computers think they have T and no T when you corrupt data, so try not to do that.
That was that thing we were talking about with World of Warcraft, where you have the item
and you don't. Exactly.
But you totally do.
So anyway, I'm about out of time here. I've got a couple of minutes. I can take questions if you want to come up, but otherwise I'll stop here, and then Thursday we will talk about databases in much more detail.
How do you fly?
Huh? What?
How do you fly?
How do I fly?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
I will.
Sorry.